Hello, hello, Walla Walla. Welcome to the Wallaholic Show for the week of September 24th, 2015. My name's Corbin. I'm your host, one of them. Alongside me is Randy.
Hey there, everybody.
And nobody else. Hey, it's just us. This week, we cover some local news, some pot, good news week. We interview, Randy actually interviews James Redford, the son of Robert Redford, creating some awesome documentaries. He made Paper Tigers, and it screamed at the Powerhouse Theater. We'll listen to them for about 20 minutes. Then we interview Aaron Wolf, who's a graduate of Lincoln High School. Some really good... Randy did a really good interview, so I urge you to listen to it.
Whoa, accolades from Corbin.
No, it was really good. It was heartfelt, you know, and authentic. I really liked it. Deal of the week? We don't know it yet, but it will be in here. It'll be like a surprise for everybody. And then we got a calendar of events coverage. Let's just start out with news.
Yeah. So in news, Corbin, the first story here is obviously a part of your week last week. You got called away to jury duty.
Yeah, jury duty. I spent 3.5 days outside of work, and it wasn't really the most productive time I've ever spent sitting on a jury. Headline in the Union Bulletin is, jury convicts Milton Freewater man in vehicular assault case. The headline was actually about me. I was in it. This story is, you know, I sound like I'm excited, but really, it was a very sad thing to be sitting on the jury, having to convict a guy that, you know, ultimately didn't mean to injure another person. Actually, it was a family that was in the vehicle, but he hurt the driver, who was the father there. Here's a summary of what the article states, because it does a better synopsis than I could. A Milton Freewater man has been convicted of a felony crime for causing a two-car injury crash last year on U.S. Highway 12 near Tushy. At the end of a 3.5-day trial, 7-woman, 5-man Superior Court jury on Monday deliberated about 50 minutes before finding Jose El Sosa, 31 years old, guilty of vehicular assault. The panel, we determined, Sosa drove under the influence of alcohol recklessly and with disregard for the safety of others when, on March 2014, the wreck occurred right outside of Tushy, across from like the McGregor's plant out there. He was convicted, and now they're kind of waiting for sentencing. This actually happened, I mean, a year ago, so it was not really a speedy trial. He waived his right to a speedy trial about 2 times, the article states. I didn't know this during, you know, being selected on the jury, you don't have any idea and or can't do any research during the jury process, so you don't get any outside influence on your judgment. You can only go based off of what evidence is presented inside the court. But the details within the article, officials said that the eastbound 2001 Chevrolet Monte Carlo that Sosa was driving crossed the center line about 1 mile east of Tushy. It sideswiped the oncoming 87 Honda Accord. Driving it was Mark A. Gomes, also of Milton Freewater. Mr. Gomes is a nurse at St. Mary's. And he had his wife in the passenger seat and his daughter in the back seat. Luckily, they weren't hurt. Gomes kind of swerved to the right as the car, as Sosa's car oncoming, went into their lane. The point of impact was on the fog line of Gomes's car line. Luckily it sideswiped the car, so the impact went kind of directly into the driver's side door rather than directly oncoming. Mr. Sosa had smelled of the odor of intoxicants and also admitted to having basically four beers during the day. He was in Seattle, then decided to drive back home, stopped in Tri-Cities. Seattle Sounders game, dropped his friend off in Seattle, drove back to Tri-Cities, stopped in Tri-Cities at around, I think it was from 5 o'clock, and then went to a bar with his friends, had two drinks, and then went to his friend's, another friend's home that night, said he only drank a quarter of the beer that they gave him, and drove home at 5 in the morning, decided to, and Yeah, he ran into the car on the way back, voted guilty on it. It's not an ideal situation. It basically gives him a Class B felony, which I looked it up after the court case because I kind of was looking at, you know, how long is he looking at? And it said max 10 years and a $20,000 fine. And to realize putting somebody in behind bars for 10 years for, you know, one night, a really horrible decision, granted, and luckily it wasn't any worse, but really weird experience. Yeah,
and I think that's a perspective that everybody needs to think about. I mean, I know from your position as a juror and feeling like you had impact in this, but the bigger thing is going back to the decisions that we each make and be able to say, this just isn't smart. Like, I should just spend the night here and drive later or take the day off work, because there is consequences. And I know that in my youth, I've probably been guilty of doing things as dumb as this or dumber. And, you know, thankfully there wasn't, you know, nothing bad happened, but it's there. And I know a bunch of people, not a bunch of people, but a couple of people I've run into that I'll see them pedaling on a bike and we'll end up talking, and they had a similar instance with their license taken away, and it's really just not worth it.
No.
And that's what they say. They say, you know what? I don't even like, I will, maybe if I go out, I'll have maybe a beer, and then I will hang out at the bar for an hour and a half just to make sure, you know?
Yep. Anyways, really sad. I'm a military, a veteran, made a poor decision, and it's like, I guess, you know, you can't let the fact that he's a veteran influence the decision or, you know, how you go, but it was, I don't know. I guess I should probably just stop talking about him. The facts were there. He was guilty of what they were accusing him of, and they don't really give you an opportunity to, you know, put your personal opinion in it, right? You go with the facts.
Yeah.
Okay, time for the next article in the Union Bulletin again. We've been accused of just reading Union Bulletin articles.
Yeah, no.
And we realize that we do talk a lot about Union Bulletin articles, and, you know, we don't really have much to choose from, guys. It's not breaking news story. It's news coverage.
We're not exactly reporters, but we do snag news, and we can call this the rip and read. That made somebody happy when we said that. They felt like it would be much, much better labeled that way instead of the news segment, the rip and read. So this is for you.
All right. Chamber Awards showcase Walla Walla businesses. A bank whose employees are investors in the community was named Business of the Year Award on Wednesday at the Walla Walla Valley Chamber of Commerce 2015 Business Awards Showcase. Banner Bank got the night's top award in a fun-filled ceremony in the lobby of the Banker Boyer Bank.
Kind of ironic. Two big banks, one winning, one hosting, but that's the community of Walla Walla.
I don't know if you could call them big banks, Randy.
Well, for Walla Walla, they're the big banks. Maybe not in the big world of things, but here they're the big banks.
That is true. Banner Bank won based on a whole bunch of volunteer hours that their employees did. Pretty cool thing. There's some other awards that they gave out called the Catalyst Award, the Downtown Walla Walla Foundation, the City of Walla Walla, Whitman College, and DeSales Catholic High School got that award for what they did with Mumford & Sons. Nonprofit of the Year goes to the Health Center. The Sweet Service Award was given to Brasserie 4, and then there's the Environmentalists Award, but not going to cover that. Well, okay, fine. Providence St. Mary Medical Center got the Smart Business Partner Award because of their green sustainability staff, and they've been making steps to reduce electricity use and natural gas use. Nice job, guys. Saved a lot of paper, too. Then they got Youth Entrepreneur of the Year Award. That was awarded to Samuel Wells, 16 years old. He's principal of his consulting company, Keep Calm Walla Walla. The firm specializes in computer technology services, executive services, and errands. It was developed in a response to the demand from his mother's family and friends. Wells does everything from setting up new phones to helping create Facebook pages. Wells teaches about smartphones and Facebook in the Quest program at the community college. Same thing we interviewed Jody about last week. Second place was Cosmo Nerdin family friend of the show, 10-year-old, set up his cookie subscription business called Cosmos Cookie Club. The one-year-old business generates about $100 each month. I was pretty surprised when I was like, nice job, Cosmo. He puts a quarter of his profits in the business account, a quarter in his church mission savings, and the rest he spends on what he wants to spend it on. Solid work, Keith Nerden, raising that child.
No doubt.
Nice job, Keith. Love to have you back on. Give us a holler. Pretty cool awards. The chamber, you know, elects the businesses that deserve this stuff. But at the end, there's a comment on this article from BAAL Haven, Ball Haven, says, so a ceremony where people who think they are important gives awards to the other people they think they're important. So in order to win the award from the chamber, you must volunteer at the chamber? Not really. And I don't really know who else would be more qualified to give business awards rather than the Walla Walla Chamber of Commerce, Miss Ballhaven, Mr. Ballhaven. Sorry. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess before people post, it's so easy anymore to post stuff without actually doing your homework that it happens. And sometimes there's some things that aren't very well informed that are put up there. So I kind of like the third place one too. This is really cool. This gal, Olivia Cassetto, is a 9-year-old, and she repurposes the notorious single socks into stuffed animals, sock monsters, and handmade creatures. It's pretty creative. You know, like, I know I have a bunch of those socks laying around, and I usually just throw them away. But the fact that a 9-year-old is doing this, that's what I think is really cool about that. You know, the younger you get, I mean, you know, not to discount Mr. Wells, but at 16 years old, you have a pretty good grasp on things, you know?
I breezed over that because I thought it was, and I don't want to insult 9-year-old Olivia, but you're making sock puppets that you would use with your hand out of used socks. And I just...
You wash them, Corbin. You wash them.
Yeah, but like my socks, I guess maybe I'm just grossed out by my own socks. I wouldn't want anybody making a puppet out of those.
I like where the head's at. If you start doing, you know, entrepreneur stuff like this when you're 9, you're going to have a good, successful life and keep working on ideas and eventually do something great, I'm sure.
Yeah. Next story, Randy.
So this headline is Tri-Cities Airport expected to add daily direct LA flights next year. This is from the Walla Walla Union Bulletin. And there has been a grant awarded of $750,000 to attract an airline to provide the service. And then there's been added more than $300,000 in local funds. That, I think, is a huge asset. I fly out of Tri-Cities all the time. It's less than an hour drive away. It's pretty doable. And the flights out of there are pretty direct compared to Walla Walla. You always have to go to Seattle, yeah. And sometimes that, you know, causes a long way over there, or you do not be able to make the connectors when you need to. So pretty excited about that. So up next, tourism agency turns attention to meeting planners and groups. And this is again from the Walla Walla Union Bulletin. Vicky Hillhouse did this. Nice job, Vicky. But tourism Walla Walla is bringing in, they opened up a new position. And since Walla Walla has been discovered by tourists, now they're going to target meeting planners and associations to come have like retreat style stuff here. So they opened a position just for that, so that person can continue to do outreach in other areas and encourage that type of thing here in Walla Walla. And I think that could be awesome.
Yeah, well, the guy got hired. Marcus Carney was chosen for the job through a nationwide search. It brought applicants from across the country. That's crazy. Maybe not so surprising. Not really. Okay. Wonder how much it pays.
Well, he does have a bachelor's degree and a
lot of experience.
A lot of experience, yeah.
Yeah, he got started in the industry as captain for Ride the Ducks of Seattle Attraction. He earned his bachelor's in tourism management from the University of South Carolina, Columbia. And he also was a part of Travel Tacoma, and he was a tourism and events coordinator for the Greater Oak Harbor Chamber of Commerce. Cool. Now we'll have a lot of corporate events going on. Maybe they'll bring in some, like, I don't know, what kind of, I want some cool corporate events coming to town. Like maybe the Google folk will come and like.
That would be really neat. And decide they want to put a little office here and grow that tech industry that Mr. Fredrickson is trying to lure in.
There, you know? We are. And it'll really help with those flights from Silicon Valley. Well, LA. I mean, those guys can drive over there. You know what I'm saying?
I do know. See what
you're
the saying.
Connection I just
mm-hmm,
made?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Next story, Grizzly Bear Complex Fire Command to shift. It's basically got moved from got moved to Dayton, and now they're just kind of scaling back. The Department of Natural Resources is going to take it over again. And
well, to the state agencies going away from the national, federal, the rains. There's another article that in mycolumbiabasin.com that the cooler temps temper the fires. We got that rain. Those things have helped out. And, you know, not that they're not still going, but it definitely helped out to reduce the fuels and get some moisture on it. So the season is coming to an end.
Speaking of burning, our next article is a little intro for the next article. What do you think? Pretty good? Probably breaking some copyright laws, but guess what? Okay. Randy, it's your article.
Well, I know this excites you more than me, and we should have brought Bruce in specifically for this segment because he loves to talk about weed, but this is again from the Union Bulletin. Washington marijuana sales amount to $357 million in 15 months.
Yeah.
With no tax revenue to the locals.
Well, that's not very true. I did some research on that because we've gotten some reports from other folks like, no, that's wrong. It's right. It's wrong. So the sales tax act from those sales, normal sales tax that would be on any other product, does stay local. So the increase in business can theoretically help. I looked at the tables, or the, I guess it was the tax breakdowns online from the sales of what's going on in Washington at the Washington state level. For recreational marijuana, state revenue, like tax revenue, is 12 million or almost 13 million. So I guess that's not the local level, but it does kind of help. I don't know. John Turner brought up a really good point when we talked to him about, you know, his position on legalizing or how they're going about legalizing and implementing it. And if it was to increase the load, the duties that were on or on law enforcement, as in criminal activity would increase, assuming a criminal activity would increase because you're legalizing marijuana. Not sure how that works, but they don't get any extra money for themselves to fight the problem or enforce the problem. It does change quite a bit for how they have to enforce the DUIs driving. If you're not privy to the law, here it is. Washington allows individuals over the age of 21 to possess up to 1 ounce of cannabis or up to 16 ounces of marijuana-infused solid products and 72 ounces of marijuana-infused liquid products for personal use. And using marijuana in a public area is a civil violation, and you can face a fine. Okay? That makes sense?
That does make sense.
And the way that the tax stuff works, they implemented, and it has since changed, but this is as much information as I can get, at every level of the producer to the processor to the retailer is an extra 25% excise tax at each level. Producer 25%, processor 25%, and retailer 25%. That's the tax on top of the other, like B&O tax and sales tax. So now you know, the more you know. And the next story is, school district says that pot shops is too close to bus stops. Article in the UB. There's a public hearing on Thursday over the Walla Walla Weedery, which would be the second marijuana retail store to open in the city. And it drew some concerns from opponents because the school district testified that it is where school bus stops are that children would be at. And they're having this kind of fall under the you got to be 1,000 feet away from, or is it yards away from, schools and all of that stuff if you're going to open up a pot shop. Interesting. We'll see how it plays out. I think the article did say that they will be able to open under a conditional use permit, perhaps here soon, and that it shouldn't really be a huge issue. It's kind of interesting, like bus stops, like, I mean, they sell alcohol close to where children have bus stops, and they sell alcohol near children everywhere. So
yeah.
Special use for weederies?
It's just, you know, a process. You know, there's change that comes, and I'm sure when alcohol started being sold like this as well, like there was huge resistance, and, you know, after the prohibition days, and slowly but surely, like, everything loosens up and it moves on and becomes normal, you know? Well, in rebuttal to most of our news comes from the UB. This is an article offline about...
Online.
Offline, online.
If it's off of online...
Then it's online. Okay, glad we got that figured out. Headline is, these 18 towns and cities in Washington have the most breathtaking scenery. And guess who got number one?
Walla Walla, yeah. I'll see you in a Walla Walla.
And next was Anacortes and Paul's Bull and
Prosser. We don't care about them.
But anyways, and again, more accolades for Walla Walla, and we love this place.
Well, and to be fair, this is at www.onlyinyourstate.com. So, I mean, I don't know who the authority is behind this website, but I guess we can just put up kind of random websites and what they say about us.
Sure.
It's interesting enough. All right, next up, we have the interview with Mr. James Redford. Yeah, that's Robert Redford's son. He's a documentarian, really good one. He made documentaries such as Toxic Hot Seat, The Health Dangers of Flame Retardants, The Big Picture, Rethinking Dyslexia, and Watershed, Colorado River Water Basin. Recently, he made a documentary on Lincoln High School. The local Lincoln, yes, Walla Walla Lincoln High School, because they are doing some crazy stuff that's really helping out the at-risk youth and, or, you know, the youth that gets suspended from school, the regular common school program.
So, and there's something called an ACEs score, which has to do with higher risk and, you know, toxic environments that they've been raised in. Anyways, really interesting documentary. It's screened here twice. At the Powerhouse Giza Powerhouse Theater, yeah. And I went and saw it. It was pretty amazing.
I'm bummed I didn't get to see it, but I watched the trailer and it has some folks in it that I know: Kofler, Sharp, and Sport Leader.
Yeah, yeah, no, good people. But anyways, yeah, pretty cool to be able to sit down with this guy. It's kind of funny because right before the event, when we got to sit down, and if Betsy is listening. We got to do it in their closet. They had a storage closet upstairs. It was the only quiet spot, so we just grabbed two stools. Pretty cool. I have a picture of it. Maybe we'll post it, but Betsy said she'd get back at me if I shared it with the world, so maybe I won't. But neat guy and has a great vision for what he's doing and makes some neat stuff.
So listen to it.
So I'm here today with Jamie Redford, which is... we've all heard that name since we were little kids. And how is that even growing up in the shadow of somebody who everybody has seen since day one? Yeah.
Well, I really don't know anything else, so I can't really say, you know. I feel fortunate, I suppose, that if you had to be born to a international movie star, that I got the one I got, because he's an extraordinary man and a good person. Good family man.
The Castle is one of my favorite. That movie just, it's every time it's an emotional movie for me. Mm. And but anyways, love this project you're doing. Paper Tiger is something that I'm excited to see this screening. I've talked to Jim Sporleader about it a lot. And it's something I want to learn more about because my passion is for kids. And not knowing what that environment is and looks like, I have no idea how to deal with it in the way that I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot more about today. Yeah. What made you start this project or film?
Well, my partner on this is Karen Pritzker. We have a company called KPJR Films, and we like to look at issues and problems that one can help address through the right kind of storytelling. And changing the perception of at-risk youth is a really important thing to do. If you actually understand the science behind what we consider to be, what do we think of when we think of at-risk? We think of kids who don't do well in school, who don't show up, who act out, who've maybe run into trouble with the law or substance abuse, or you name these things that get kids labeled bad. If you scratch below that surface and look at things like past history, what was often going on during childhood, what chronic stress does to the brain and body. You wouldn't look at them and say bad. You'd say, well, we have to help. It's a fundamental shift. And so we were looking at that science and realizing that the hard science that proves that the brain and body we were looking at the science that proves that the brain and body of children literally are altered by chronic stress in ways that are not good. One, it predisposes you to all kinds of health problems like heart disease, cancer, high blood pressure, diabetes. Secondly, the psychological effect of that chronically is often can lead to self-soothing behaviors that are often expressed through drugs or drinking or excess eating or unsafe sex, and you name it. So it all ties back. So the question is, well, what do you do about this? Because, you know, what good is that information unless you're somehow wrestling with a solution? And it didn't take long to discover Lincoln High School online because there were a number of nationwide publications that had covered the success story of Lincoln High School. Jim Sporleader had attended a conference at a point when he was sort of at a breaking point as to how to be the right leader at Lincoln High School, and learned about toxic stress, about adverse childhood experiences, what they do to the brain and body. And as he would say, it was an epiphany of sorts, and he came back to Lincoln determined to be more supportive. I mean, most of the teachers at Lincoln are extraordinary people, and many of them have been there for a very long time. So it was really a matter of providing the right administrative framework and some big changes, like helping bring the health center to the school for kids who, most of them, had never even had a wellness check. And so you put it all together, and you have a story that's a pretty inspiring story about what happened here in Walla Walla with the reapproaching alternative high schools. But the model here, it's not that there's a cookie-cutter approach, but there are so many other people that are yearning to see how to do this because they want to do something similar. Because one thing's for sure, most people understand right now that the three strikes you're out policy that we embraced two decades ago is a failure, and it's no longer being pursued. In fact, people are trying to figure out how to come back from that idea of zero tolerance. And in fact, it's going the complete opposite way. But what do you do? And what does it look like? Hopefully, Paper Tigers will help people understand that better.
So how does this differ as a director from different projects that you've embraced? And what are the other projects? This is obviously the first one that I've heard of. And I'm excited to hear someone with your heart and the passion for those type of things. Whatever other issues have you come up against? And what are the other projects that I heard since then? You've haven't been back because you have two other big projects going on now, and possibly before that, I'm sure you did some as well. What projects are those?
Well, I think the underlying thread in most of my work is I have a really personal intuitive response to the idea that there is something very important that is not being understood, and you need to work on changing that perception. So the change of perception started for me 20 years ago. I went through two life-saving liver transplants. So my first documentary was changing the perception of organ donation. Because in those days, in the mid-90s, it was pretty much about eerie science, sort of Frankenstein eerie science, or a dark comedy with organs being thrown around the operating room. And so, you know, for the average person, organ donation seemed creepy and weird and unattractive and don't even think about it. When in fact, the truth is that it's an extraordinarily altruistic, heroic thing that Americans do every single day, and we were not celebrating that. So I wanted to tell that story, and it was a really rewarding experience. I was directing some feature films at the time in screenwriting, and but over time I just found the reward of working, using my craft to help tell stories that could actually move the bar forward in some way was just irresistible. So since that time, I've done some in the environmental landscape. I did one about a small community in New Jersey that was poisoned by paint waste from the Ford Motor Company. I did another story about the oncoming water shortage in the Colorado River Basin, which has unfortunately turned out to be far more prescient than even we realized. I also did one for HBO. I've done four or five for HBO, and I did one about a little-known thing where the chemical industry was suppressing the fact that chemical flame retardants were really damaging to our health, and just as importantly, totally ineffective as flame retardants, but very profitable chemicals to sell to furniture manufacturers. So that was an exposé film. So they really, I mean, the style changes, but the environmental and the social. I did one about dyslexia, HBO film that changed people's perceptions on what it means to be dyslexic, i.e., you're not stupid. You're actually a different learner, and you're actually more likely to run a Fortune 500 company and be highly creative than not. So, you know, these are just about changing perceptions.
So are you on the same travel schedule that Jim is? He's on a crazy whirlwind, bouncing here for this one and then that one and all these screenings and trying to help out wherever he can. Are you involved with that, or do you have your other work that is taking more of your time?
Oh, you know, first off, I remember when we wrapped principal photography here in Walla Walla, and I had dinner or breakfast with Jim, and he said, well, I guess this is goodbye. And I said, oh, Jim, we haven't even said hello yet, you know. And I think he now understands that. Because what's happening for Jim and for myself and anyone else that's making impact documentaries is the old model of delivering a program to a network and then being, you know, tossing the ball to them and saying goodbye to it. Those days are long gone. I mean, storytellers make direct relationships with their audience today. A lot of that's through online. A lot of it's through their now facilitators that help connect various communities with the right kind of content. I think as a society, we're becoming to rely increasingly on documentaries to help us understand things, largely because the mainstream networks have fallen into such disrepair for so many different reasons. And so really, I see documentaries as a vital way for people to come and have a deeper understanding of important and complicated issues. So in the case of Paper Tigers, we're delaying our TV broadcast on Pivot Television, and we're going out and having semi-theatrical screenings for about 6 months to make sure that the film can get out there as quickly as possible to the people that need it. So in the coming 6 months, Jim and myself and other people associated with the film, we'll be traveling all over the country. We have 167 requests from schools and institutions right now. We're just trying to book them all and making sure that everyone gets what they need. You know, it's an honor to have people embrace a story that you feel is important and just sort of reminds you why you did it all in the first place.
How do you feel like this is going to impact America? Obviously, you've seen some results already, and like I told Jim, we were just texting this morning, and I said, you know, I am so excited to learn more about this because I constantly run into people with these challenges, and I know that I don't have the way and the tools to deal with them the way that is going to get through to them or be effective and helpful. And potentially this could even affect the world, which is, I mean, start with America and then move on to the world. Have you done any screenings in other countries?
It's really interesting because, you know, we are defining our own distribution landscape right now with this film. We're working with a group called Tugg.com, T-U-G-G.com, and they're an online aggregator for screening. So anybody, whether you have 10 people or 10,000 people that wants to host a screening, can organize it through them. Just reach out and they'll facilitate a screening. But we haven't really, you know, we haven't been doing major marketing. We don't have any advertising. It's all just word of mouth through the online communities, and yet we've gotten inquiries from Australia, New Zealand, the Netherlands, England. So that's happened. Caught us complete surprise, and you know, we'll make sure we meet their needs.
So, what do you have a vision for it, or is it just kind of an animal that you turn loose and see what happens for it, and then? Obviously, besides creating this amazing production, like, how do you follow up with something like this? How do you, I guess, see it through?
Yeah, it's a long haul. I mean, you know, as I said, you know, you don't just hand in a film anymore to some major broadcaster. You are as much a part of its distribution as anybody. And so for us, the next 6 months, we'll be doing screenings around the country. And then it goes to educational distribution. And that's when, for a license fee, anybody can license it and show it in their classroom. And then it goes for television broadcast. All of that to say that what comes at the end of that is individual consumer, whether you stream it online or rent it or purchase it, that comes after broadcast. So there's all these windows, and making sure that each one of them gets their needs met. It's a big team effort for all of us. We got a half a dozen people working on this full time. It's a lot of work.
So if any of our listeners are out there and they want to help with this message and getting the word out, how can they do it? Is there a page they can like? Is there things that they can personally do? Is there funding that is still could be used to help get additional screenings out? Like, what would be the way, if they wanted to help out, that they could?
Well, there's a couple of things. First, for anyone that really wants to know more, Paper Tigers introduces the idea of adverse childhood experiences in the setting of Lincoln High School. We have a follow-up film that will come out in 2016 called Resilience, and that's a one-hour film that really looks at the science of stress and how hope can offset that, and what does hope really look like, and how does hope actually bring you back from predestined poor health. So that is a more of an educational PBS type film, although I haven't talked to PBS yet. But that film will be there eventually for people who want to know more. In the meantime, acestoohigh.org, and that's acestoohigh.org, is a wonderful online community for anyone that wants to know anything about what to do about toxic stress and children and how to help people and make sure we have trauma-informed environments for kids that need it. It's run by a woman named Jane Stevens, who started this 3 years ago. It's an incredible online community. We wouldn't be having the success with awareness that we're having without that. You can also go with our website, KPJR Films. We'll be launching soon. In the meantime, we have PaperTigersMovie.com landing page for anyone that wants to hear what the latest news is with the film as it tours around the country. But really, going to TUGG.com, T-U-G-G.com, and you can find the film Paper Tigers on their site, and they will walk you through how to bring it to your community, whether you need to go out and get a sponsor or you want to pre-sell or whatever it is. It's actually far less prohibitive than people might think.
Awesome. And since this is a local Wallaholic show, what do you have to say about your experience with Walla Walla and the town and community? And obviously, you've said you've spent a lot of time here. What do you think of it?
I think Walla Walla is a wonderful town. It's a small town with a lot of big city qualities and attributes for people to enjoy. And clearly, there's an interesting intersection of all kinds of things, everything from the agriculture to the wine industry to the correctional facility to Whitman College, to you name it. I mean, it's like an amazing melting pot of different things. It makes for an interesting community. And you know, getting to know the folks at Lincoln and their families is a real treasure for me. Just really genuinely good people, strong people, just the kind of folks that we'd hope would be in the classroom helping kids. So it's been a very inspiring time, and I hope to stay connected going into the future.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and your passion and putting all the effort into this amazing film that I'm going to get to watch here shortly. And I just can't say enough for people who have the vision and the means and everything to put something like this together to make the world a better place and help people out.
Well, thank you. Just it's in the trying, and I'm giving it my best.
Thanks again.
Nice interview, Randy. Mr. Redford's doing some pretty amazing stuff, and I have a feeling like this one documentary is going to be picked up and go a little bit larger than we think it is. You know what I mean?
There's screenings all over the United States right now. And Mr. Spoorleader, I've met with him a couple times, and he's traveling the country right now, helping get the word out and teaching other educators how to deal with this. And it's pretty neat.
Thanks for making Walla Walla proud, Mr. Jim Spoorleader. He was my principal at Garrison. Cool stuff. Okay, next we got Mr. Aaron Wolf, who's Mr. Aaron Wolf?
He's actually in the Paper Tigers documentary. He is also working at the Gisa Powerhouse Theater now, and one of the kids that came through this program, and neat kid, and has a lot of neat plans for how to work in that segment and help out. So yeah, just caught him there and asked him a couple questions as well.
Let's go to that.
So I'm here with Aaron Wolf, and Aaron, you went to the school. Were you there when it was Payne?
No.
You came in after when it was already changed to Lincoln High School then?
Yes.
Or is it alternative school?
I think it was alternative for a while, and then they just changed it to Lincoln High School.
Awesome. And so my questions, I feel like for me personally, I had a very normal, stress-free, whatever that actually is, because everything I heard you saying earlier, well, that's what my norm is, so I don't really know any different than that. What would you say when you, from your perspective, when you see a person that you perceive as not having things as rough as you but don't appreciate, what would you have to say to them? And to expound, it's like, I know for instance, like I came from, I'm the oldest of 12 kids, came from what is considered poverty. And we still are aware enough of our surroundings to be able to pick someone out and say, wow, like that kid doesn't know how good he has it because I'm missing something in my life, but I don't understand necessarily the stress that you came from because I didn't have those type of situations in my life, that it was just lack of money. So could you speak to that just a little bit?
I'd probably tell somebody to watch the video. I mean, listen to us, listen to what we say in it. I mean, I myself am a very visual person, so it helps to see something.
Certainly, and I am excited to be here for the screening as well. But if somebody didn't have the opportunity to make it out, I think it's because when you understand, for me, when I understand what I don't have or what I want, now I have a way to go about like searching it or looking for it. But I've moved around in the workforce a lot, and when you take a new job, sometimes you don't even know the questions to ask, right? And so without that knowledge, you can't help. So if you've acknowledged and recognized some of those things in your own life, to be able to have, you know, other kids ask those same questions, and I don't know how to expound on that, but I feel like living in a place of gratitude has been extremely helpful for me, appreciating what I do have. And so that's, I guess, where I'm coming from with this question is, if somebody has something that maybe you didn't have, but they're not appreciating it, what are those things that you could point out?
That's a tough one for me. I don't really know how to answer that. Because I haven't really, that has not come up in my conversation with other people that have something that I don't, and it just hasn't really come up speaking.
Yeah, no worries. And so what lessons have you learned from this that have, so I feel like every circumstance that I've had that has helped me grow and change, it now enables me to help somebody behind me going through the same circumstances. Do you have any of those tools that you feel equipped to go out and help somebody now?
Maybe.
Thanks so much.
We got a great deal of the week for you guys this week, but first I want to introduce Lay of Cafe Mosaic, which is where we're at right now. Lay, can you say hi?
Hi.
We have the deal of the week, which we will introduce in a little bit. But first, can we give a quick rundown, a summary of when you guys changed it over and what people can expect when they come in here? I mean, it's not going to be the cookie tree, right? What is it going to be like if they haven't been here before?
Well, first of all, you're going to see big smiles because we love people. And you're going to smell some great food because we're total foodies who are also coffeeholics who happen to love art in many forms.
Perfect. And on your guys' business card, Mosaic, it's the bringing together of the individual pieces to create something uniquely beautiful. Can you talk about how you guys do that in the food that you have here?
Sure. We look for great ingredients that are fresh and flavorful, and we look for ways to put them together in sort of unique and complementary combinations. And being a foodie, I get bored faster than anyone else, so not only will you enjoy some of the favorites of the old cookie tree, you'll enjoy some new things like Greek panini with goat cheese and roasted red peppers, and you'll almost always see something new on the menu for that week, because usually I'm bored and I'm experimenting.
That sounds pretty cool. What other things would I find on the menu? This is the first deal of the week that I haven't been here and eaten here. I'm sorry. I know. I'm coming in here trying to do this. What can you name some sandwiches you got going right now and the other items?
Sure. One of the old classics is Reuben on a marble rye, which is just a yummy favorite. One of my favorite pairings is our sort of secret tomato orange soup that we pair with a grilled cheese with cheddar and Munster. And then I've kind of worked on some dressings that I make. And so one of our new favorites of customers is an Asian salad with just some awesome Asian peanut cilantro dressing, and just keeps people eating their veggies.
Sounds pretty good. Okay, and now let's do the deal of the week. It's a really good one. What's going to be on the coupon that gets mailed out to the mailing list and the people can hear in this clip that they're listening to?
All right, we're excited to offer you a buy one, get one free sandwich, either hot or cold. And with every sandwich comes a side. And we have a great comfy atmosphere with Wi-Fi and good music, and so come on by and check us out. We'd love to meet you.
Awesome. What sandwich do you recommend they get? You got to name two, because it's a buy one, get one. What one should they be looking at?
Okay. Well, if you haven't been here before, chicken almond salad sandwich is an absolute comfort food. And then one of my all-time favorites is one of our Greek paninis with hummus that I make, and roasted red peppers and pesto and tomatoes, and it's just a whole lot of goodness.
Thank you very much, Leigh. And Ben Edstrom, your husband's Ben, and we didn't introduce him, I don't think, so we got to give him a little bit of credit. I look forward to coming in and having that sandwich. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, now it's time for the calendar of a van. Calendar of events. Yeah, that wasn't very good. Okay, now it's time for this week's calendar of events, where we kind of give you a rundown of what's going on in and around Walla Walla.
Okay, so first up, this event is from the Friends of Music. It's a free family festival downtown Walla Walla. Quite a few things to do. The Whitman College basketball camp is going to be from 11 to 1 p.m., 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Spokane Street. You can hear the Recess Monkeys play live music at 2 p.m. There'll be vending booths, games, and Izzy the Camel will be downtown. This is on Saturday, October 3rd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. So go check that out. And the price is free.
Next event, geocaching at Bennington Lake. We're at? Oh, it's at Bennington Lake, Saturday, October 3rd, 2015, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Adults are $10, and children and 18 and under are free. If you're looking... some of you might not know what geocaching is, but I'm about to tell you. If you're looking for a fun new activity to get you outdoors, breathing fresh air, and providing some exercise, this event is for you. Geocaching is anytime, anywhere, treasure hunting experience. There are over 2 million geocaches hidden worldwide, and they can be done with friends, family outing, or even by yourself if you're a loser. It's the perfect combination of technology and great outdoors. Basically, you got GPS indexed geocache stuff. It's like a little scavenger hunt. Grab your friends and go do it out at Bennington Lake Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
I have some cousins that did this, and it was pretty fun because, you know, you take like a little car or something that you're done with and you take it, and it's kind of like the little free library system where you leave something and you take something. So you can just kind of collect these little treasures or just add to them, whatever you feel like doing, but kind of a neat thing.
I have this ultimate plan for geocachers. If I was, you know, kind of a more mean person, set up booby traps for geocachers, like, you know, they find things that actually explode in their face and smell bad. Not like bombs. Whoa, I got a... Yeah.
Yeah. Tailor that back. Stink
not
bombs.
Explosion, like yeah. A gentle, yeah, yeah, yeah. A gentle boom, like a pop maybe.
Yeah.
Would be more appropriate. Wow. Next event, Randy.
All right. This is the Historic Homes Tour in Dayton. And starts at the Dayton Historic Depot Saturday, October 3rd from 1 to 4. The price is $15. They have a lot of neat buildings and old places there in Dayton. And I know Jenny Butler down there, and she's done a great job heading up that society. She may have passed it on by now, but they have the Weinhardt Hotel, the depot, of course, and a bunch of other neat buildings, the county courthouse that's still functioning. And so go check that out.
Next up, Paragon Auto Cornhole Tournament at Paragon Autos. Kind of funny, I didn't know that they did this. But Sunday, October 10th, the gates open at 9:30 a.m. You can go there, start playing your cornhole tournament, $20 per team, and each team receives two shirts. First place gets 75% of the entry fees, and second place receives 25% of the entry fees. I saw that. I'm wondering about the legalese behind that, but we're just going to let that slide right under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
You can sign up at Paragon Auto or email them at www.cornhole@gmail.com. Deadline to register is 9/26, September 26.
Next event, 13th annual AAUW Kitchen Tour. And we talked about the pond tour a couple weeks back. This one is on October 4th from 12 to 5 p.m. It starts at Jacoby's. The price is $20. And here's the details. You can stop by Jacoby's and pick up your map and tour guide and your protective booties, which are really, really important when you're going into nice people's houses to protect their carpets, floor coverings, yeah, etc. And a wristband. There's 8 remarkable kitchens that you'll be able to check out. And yeah, it's going to be really awesome. You can purchase tickets at Earthlight Books, Bright's Candies. You can also purchase them through Brown Paper Tickets. So go check that out.
Next event. Tiger Canyon Tour at Tiger Canyon. It's at Tiger Creek Road, Saturday, October 10th, 10 to 2 p.m. Adults are $10, children 18 under are free. Join Whitman Geology and Environmental Studies Professor Bob Carson on an adventure up Tiger Canyon. This trip will include geology field trip and a beautiful 1 mile hike at the top of Tiger Canyon. Bob will discuss the canyon's trees, rocks, and faults and geology history. That sounds pretty interesting. Come prepared to have your eyes open to the natural history of the area.
Awesome. And this is an event from our friend of the show, Michael Gordon. Actually, he's just a loyal listener, but it's going to be a wall wall.
I don't know him. I'm not friends with him.
Well, you will be. Cool. Wall wall half marathon at Pioneer Park. This is going to be Sunday, October 11th from 8 to 2. The price is $49 for the half marathon. For the 10K, it's $29. For the 5K, it's $19. There's a new course. It starts and finishes at Pioneer Park. But yeah, if you have any more questions, give Michael a call. His number is 509-540-5913. Or email him at michaelgordon17@hotmail.com.
Don't forget about National Alpaca Farm Days at the Old Homestead Alpacas, Saturday, September 26th. And Sunday, September 22nd, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days. Thanks, Land Van Diver, for sending this event in to us. Price is free. Go check out the alpaca babies this coming week.
That wraps it up. Corbin, what's the best way for our listeners to find us?
You really threw me off with that. That's kind of my job. You can follow us on Facebook, subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you haven't used Stitcher Radio, you're missing out on the world of podcasting and on-demand listening. You can call us at 509-219-0030, even though you probably won't. You guys never call me. I don't know why. And also, you can get involved with the show. Go to wallaholics.com, click on the resources tab, and there'll be like 3-4 forms that you can fill out. If you want to be a co-host of the show, fill it out. If you want to give us a deal of the week, fill it out. If you want to give us an event, fill it out. There's an event for that. Well, there's a form for that.
There's a form for that.
Okay, that wraps it up. Thanks for listening to this week's Wallaholic Show. Catch you next week.